Have you ever noticed that it's a lot easier to find answers when you know what the questions are? Hi, I'm Rob West. Sometimes the hardest part of solving a problem is coming up with the right questions to ask, and that's certainly true for managing money. Today, financial teacher and author Ron Blue drops in with three financial questions you need to answer. Then it's on to your calls at 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance Live, biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Well, our guest Ron Blue is co-founder of Kingdom Advisors and the author of several books on personal finance from a biblical perspective, including Never Enough. Ron, always great to have you with us.
Well, Rob, I enjoy it all the time, so thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm excited about this because a hallmark of your teaching for a long time has been these critical questions. There's three of them that you say the Bible asks and we all must answer at some point. The first one being, who owns it? Why is that so foundational?
Well, until you answer that question, you don't know who the steward is or trustee is of the money.
Yeah.
And when you say that I own it, then I can do with it what I want. But if I say God owns it, now my actions change because now I'm managing somebody else's money or finances. And it's the most fundamental financial question that anybody can ask. And in answering it, will change your money behavior, but it'll also change your life. And it's, to me, really the first step of the lordship. Issue. Is he really Lord of my life? And if so, he owns all that he's entrusted me with. So it's a biggie, Rob.
Yeah, it sure is. And you said it'll change your financial behaviors because you've also taught us that your behaviors follow your belief system. So really that idea of who owns it, God owning it all, if that's at the core of your belief system, it changes everything about how you actually manage money. Now, this second question is equally as important, Ron, and that is, how much is enough? Talk to us about that question.
Well, it's we live in a culture and that we're surrounded by unbelievable amounts of wealth, if you will,
yeah.
At least reports of wealth. You know, I watched a golf tournament a couple of days ago, and the winner got $3.6 million,
wow.
Which is fine. I'm not questioning that. But here's what I do question, and that is, do I have a finish line?
Yeah.
Is there an amount that when I get there, I'm done? Or do I keep looking around and saying I'll never quit because there's always somebody ahead of me?
Yes.
And answering that question gives a sense of a goal that can be accomplished, and it gives a sense of peace and contentment that you'll never get unless you answer that question. In other words, unless you have a finish line, you'll never have contentment either.
Wow. Yeah, that's powerful. And I know you've taught us that that applies both to your lifestyle, your spending on a monthly basis, as well as your balance sheet, your long-term accumulation. All right, Ron, let's finish with this third question. We have just about a minute left, and that is the next steward chosen and prepared? What do we need to know?
Well, we live in a culture that has a lot of wealth associated with it. Let's just take the average person, if you will, who owns a home. And if they die at an old age, then they've had a retirement plan, perhaps, and they own a home and they're debt-free, then somebody's going to be managing that money or that wealth after your death. And it's a really good idea to know who that is and make sure that they're prepared. And the reason that's so important is because you're really transferring God's possessions or God's money. So I want to make sure that I'm transferring it to someone who considers themselves to be a steward and accepts that responsibility and then are prepared to handle it also. So it's a biggie too.
It really is. And I know you've taught us there. Part of that is asking the question, what's the worst thing that can happen? Because there are not only financial, but spiritual implications to passing wealth to the next steward if they're not properly prepared. Well, this has been quick, Ron, but really vital questions we all need to answer. Thanks for stopping by.
Yeah, as always, Rob, I enjoyed it and appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. That's Ron Blue, author of Never Enough and frequent contributor here at Faith and Finance. Your calls are next, 800-525-7000. Stick around. Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance Live. Always a privilege to have my good friend, one of my mentors and the founder of Kingdom Advisors, Ron Blue, along with us. He's a sought-after speaker. He has written more than 20 books on biblical finance. He is, in many senses, the father of personal finance as it relates to biblical financial decision-making. And he joins us regularly on this broadcast. We're always grateful when he does. You know, he raised these three questions today that he says every Christian needs to ask and answer. Ultimately, who owns it? First of all. Secondly, how much is enough? And I think that's both for your lifestyle as well as for your long-term accumulation. And then thirdly, is the next steward chosen and prepared? Your final stewardship decision is who you will pass what God has entrusted to you onto next. And that person or entity needs to be not only selected, but also prepared. And we often think about that in terms of heirs. You know, if you have an heir that's going to receive a significant sum of money, are they prepared to handle that? Could that money actually accelerate their lifestyle away from the Lord? The poor financial decision-making that's going on may be accelerated. It may be the wrong thing to do. And so that's why we need to prayerfully consider whether or not that's the right move. And it can change over time, and it will. You know, I think one of the questions Ron has said before is you need to ask related to every heir, what's the worst thing that can happen when he or she receives this money, and really process through that prayerfully before you make that decision. There's only three places money can go at your death: the government, to heirs, or to charity or ministry. And we want to be thoughtful about how we pass on what God has entrusted to us. Well, hopefully those questions today helped you to think through that and your role as a steward a bit more in depth. All right, let's turn the corner and begin to take your questions today on anything financial. We've got some lines open. They will fill up quickly. So if you have a question, go ahead and give us a call right now at 800-525-7000. Let's dive in. We're going to go to Oklahoma first. Hi, James. Go ahead, sir.
Yes. Thank you very much for the ministry of Faith Fi, and thank you for taking my call, Rob.
Thank you, sir.
I am currently have a bank. I've been with them a number of years, and through that bank I have two credit cards, and one actually I carried before I ever opened that bank account. I carried that credit card for 25 years, and it's a pretty smooth operation, you know, when you have the two credit cards in the bank, and then you have the savings and credit or savings and checking account. But I've heard that this bank closed an account for a senator in Kansas not too long ago, because I guess the only reason seems to be he's a conservative senator.
Right.
I've kind of gotten concerned. And also, I have money in the account with the bank that's earning only pennies a month. You know, they don't pay any interest, basically.
Yeah.
I need to at least move a significant amount of money from there somewhere else. I don't know where to go, what to do, or whether I should close that bank account or the one or both those credit cards. I've been offered another credit card just recently. I have a couple more days to decide on it, whether I would apply for it, and it would actually pay more cash back than the card I normally use. So trying to make all these decisions.
Yeah, very good, James. Well, I appreciate that. Is the bank, does it happen to be J.P. Morgan Chase? Yeah, I figured. You know, Jerry Boyer, who's our resident economist, he joins us each Friday, actually put this on the shareholder meeting agenda, submitted this topic for the company leadership to respond to around why, asking them to explain why it's good for business that they would be debanking anyone when they're in the business of providing banking services to customers. And they didn't end up addressing that particular question, but he he posed it nevertheless. I think we live in a time here, James, where we have the opportunity to, first of all, know what our convictions are. And I think this is a conviction matter. This would be a Romans 13 issue. Let each one be fully convinced in his own mind. As to who we want to do business with. And that can include who you bank with. It can also include your deployment of capital, how you invest, what kinds of companies are you investing in, and do their primary business activities align with your values and convictions? I think this is a conscience matter. You can even look at how they use their corporate profits and determine whether you want to be aligned with those companies. There's even options now through faith-based investing to screen in companies who are really promoting human flourishing and even seeking a kingdom impact as a part of their value creation with investment. So I think we've got options now that we haven't had in the past. And clearly, if you have a conviction that this is not an institution you'd like to do business with, well, I would say that's reason enough for you to look to make a change. Now, where do you go? Well, I think if you're looking for a banking partner that shares your values, one option to consider would be Christian Community Credit Union. You could learn more at joinchristiancommunity.com. That's just one option. There are certainly others. Whether you stay with one of the big national banks because you believe, you know, that they have a better, you know, banking platform, or you want to be able to walk into a local branch, I would certainly understand that, and you could do your due diligence on each of them. A helpful website is inspireinsight.com, inspireinsight.com. You can actually type in any ticker symbol of a stock, a publicly traded company, of which the banks you would likely be considering are those, and it will give you a report on, you know, all of the areas where they're using corporate dollars to support initiatives that may conflict with your values, and then you could use that information to determine which bank you wanted to go with, whether it was one of the big nationals that have a local presence in your area or a community credit union like Christian Community Credit Union. Either one could be an option. So I would prayerfully consider that. And although it's a hassle, I would encourage you to follow the leading of the Lord as you ultimately make that decision. Now, in terms of the credit card, I mean, obviously we have no problem with credit cards. You know, the credit cards aren't the problem. It's the way we use them. So as long as you're using them for budgeted items, paying them off at the end of the month, they can be very convenient and offer great benefits, including cashback rewards. In terms of comparing who has the best cashback reward offers right now, I would encourage you to go to either NerdWallet or Bankrate.com or creditcards.com. Any of those would allow you to search and sort by the type of benefit you're looking for, whether it's travel benefits or cashback, and then find which banks or credit card companies are offering the very best terms right now and reward benefits, so you could make that selection. And what you may decide is that the credit card you choose to use moving forward may be different from the banking partner that you select. I think with regard to savings, you probably want to look at those same websites I mentioned, like Bankrate.com, and see if you might want to form a relationship with one of the online banks that you would then link to your primary checking account, because, you know, you could probably do a lot better in terms of your interest rate on your savings. So with the online banks, you can get up, you know, 4.5% right now with no fees, no minimums, and that could be linked electronically to your checking account. Is all of that helpful, James?
Very much, very much. Thank
Good.
You so much.
All right. Well, we appreciate your call today. I know this is challenging, and nobody likes to, you know, especially if you have bill pay going on and you've got recurring debits and charges taking place. I realize it can be a hassle, but I would say it's worth it for you to really prayerfully consider your convictions and then decide who you want to be doing business with. Hey, thanks for being on the program today, sir. We're grateful for you. Thanks for joining us, folks. We've got a lot more to come just around the corner on Faith and Finance Live, including a few lines open. 800-525-7000. Well, it's great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance Live. I'm Rob West. We're taking your calls and questions today. The number is 800-525-7000. It's 800-525-7000. I came across this quote recently from Paul David Tripp. He writes this in his book, Sex and Money. He says that money is one of God's good creations, But this good thing becomes a bad thing for you when it becomes a ruling thing. You simply cannot serve the King of Kings and have acquisition of wealth as the organizing dream of your heart. Think about that. That's powerful. Listen to this again. Money is one of God's good creations, but this good thing becomes a bad thing when it becomes a ruling thing. And here's the key. You simply cannot serve the King of Kings and have acquisition of wealth of the as the organizing dream of your heart. And, you know, that's so true. It's not that money is bad. As Paul David Tripp says, this is one of God's good creations. The question is, how are we using it? And is it, in fact, a tool to bless others and for us to enjoy and for us to meet the needs of our families? Or is it something that becomes an end, that we're pursuing it because we think it will give us some sort of lasting fulfillment or fill a void in our lives that was only intended to be filled by God? That's really the key. And on this program, we want to point you to an eternal perspective and allow you to run to the arms of Jesus, who is your abundance, and allow money to be a tool, a good creation from God to be used for good in the world, including for your enjoyment. Well, let's apply that thinking to the practical decisions and choices you're making today with your finances. We've got a few lines open. We'd love to hear from you. 800-525-7000. Let's go to Hobe Sound, Florida, WRMB. Hi, Charles. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, sir. I just have a question on drawing Social Security. So I'll be 66 and a half next June on the 18th. So will I draw that month for Social Security, or do I have to wait to July?
Yeah, it'd be the next month. Social Security benefits are paid the month after they're due. So if you tell them you want your benefits to start in, you know, October, you would receive your first payment in November. Now, if your birthday is between the 11th and the 20th of the month, you would expect to receive your direct deposit payment each month to hit on the third Wednesday. But it would happen in the month following that, the month of your birthday that you start to claim benefits.
So what's the, is there a cutoff date? Like what date they decide to push it to the next month, or how does that work?
Yeah, well, the month in which you claim those benefits, it's not going to kick in that month, whenever you decide to start claiming those benefits. So if you elect in the month of your birthday to start, you know, claiming benefits, it would kick in the following month.
Okay.
Is that helpful?
All right. Well, not really. I'm kind of hearing what you're saying, but so if I decided to claim it in June, I would need to file it in May?
Well, you'd want to wait till you reach full retirement age, or else you're going to have a reduction, a slight reduction. You know, so if you want to get the full amount, you would want to wait until your birthday and then you'd start receiving it the next month. If you were willing to accept that, it'd be basically 1/12 of 8% that you would lose. If you took it a month, claimed it a month early, then it would kick in the next month.
Yeah, I don't want to lose any of it, so I'd probably just be better to wait then.
Yeah. So if you claim it the moment you turn full retirement age, you get your full benefit, and then that first check would come the following month.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right, Charles. God bless you, my friend. Thanks for being on the program. To Wisconsin. Hi, Sherry. Go right ahead.
Thank you so much for your ministry. I love listening to you. I try to listen to you every day.
Well, thank you.
My son is 20 years old, and he has a good job, makes pretty good money, and he is looking to buy a new used vehicle, and he has $15,000 saved, but of course we know vehicles are very expensive, and
yes.
Just trying to get some information. We don't have a lot to pick from for options for a local bank. What do you suggest where he would go to get a decent rate on a vehicle to borrow money for the rest of the vehicle?
Yeah, very good. I'll give you two websites you can go to. And what they do is every month they publish the lenders and the rates that they're offering, and you can sort them, you know, by those that, you know, are the most compelling, you know, the best rates, and they will tell you for the various, you know, ranges of dollar amounts that you're borrowing, you know, what that rate will be. I would look at either nerdwallet.com or bankrate.com. Either of those would allow you to find who has the very best auto loan rates for used cars. And, you know, you could shop around and maybe get two or three. If you want to use a Christian solution that aligns with your values, you could check with Christian Community Credit Union as well. JoinChristianCommunity.com. They have auto loans as low as $599 right now, and even some further discounts if you have automated payments. But, you know, if you're really just wanting to shop for, you know, that lender that has the most compelling rates right now, I think, you know, NerdWallet or Bankrate would be a great source for you.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, Sherry. Thanks for your call today. To Indianapolis. Hi, George. Go ahead, sir.
Great. Hey, I have two quick questions. One, I have an emergency fund and for 6 months spending, and it's just sitting in a savings account, not growing. I want to have some kind of return on that money first. So what should I do there? And the second question is, I'm 65. I'm trying to grow my, which I can't put anything in my 401k. What can I do just to start investing?
Yeah, very good. Well, for the first one, I would send you to the same place I've sent the previous caller, bankrate.com. You would just be selecting to sort by the banks that are offering the best rates. What you're going to find is they're going to be online banks that are going to be able to get you north of 4% with no fees, no minimums. You'll see which ones are offering the most compelling rates. As long as there's FDIC insurance, I'm good. They even offer a 5-star rating. Stay on the line just around the corner. I'll give you the answer to the second question. We'll be right back. Thrilled to have you with us today on Faith and Finance Live. Looks like we have two lines open at 800-525-7000. Back to the phones we go to Indianapolis. We were talking with George before the break. He's got a 6 months worth of emergency funds and a savings account, really not earning anything, and wanted to know how he can do better. I was saying to George, bankrate.com would allow him to find who has the very best rates right now for high yield savings. You can find a bank with no fees, no minimums, link that to your checking account. As long as there's FDIC insurance, you know, he could do pretty well right now with over 4% a year, which is great. Rates we haven't seen until recently for more than a decade. The second part of George's question had to do with investing. And George, you were saying that you really haven't started with your long-term investments. You're just looking to put something away for retirement, which is just around the corner. Is that right?
Well, I have. It's a small amount. It's like $70,000, but I want to know how can I grow that being retired.
Yeah, yeah, very good. You know, at 65, I mean, I would tend to recommend that, you know, you still keep as much as maybe 45% in stocks. If you wanted to have an allocation of precious metals, maybe you go 35 or 40% in stocks, 10% in precious metals, and then the balance in bonds. The reason is, even once you're in retirement at 65, you want to have some sort of growth component to this. So with $70,000, you'd typically do that through a mutual fund or a few mutual funds, either a balanced fund that has both stocks and bonds, or maybe an allocation to some stock funds to that, you know, up to that 40% target, and then the balance in some bond mutual funds, which would give you a good broad diversification. And in terms of selecting those, you can either hire an advisor, although you may be just under, you know, the minimum that some advisors would have. And you could find a certified Kingdom advisor on our website at faithfi.com, or our friends at soundmindinvesting.org through the Sound Mind Investing newsletter could really provide some helpful suggestions and recommendations for an investing strategy that's consistent with your age and goals and objectives. And you'd actually be given the mutual funds to invest in, and then, you know, that would change over time. And you could direct that money yourself, you know, by either doing it from where it's currently housed, or maybe you move it over to a Fidelity or a Schwab, some kind of, you know, custodian that gives you access to a lot of mutual funds. funds. So that would be a great way to go. Again, if you wanted kind of a hands-off approach, you hire an advisor. If you want kind of a you direct it, but you know, with some help, that's where soundmindinvesting.org comes in. And then if you want kind of a completely automated solution, you could look at a robo-advisor like Betterment or the Schwab Intelligent Portfolios. Those would use exchange-traded funds based on a series of questions you would answer to build a very low-cost index portfolio, which is it's just a simple way of saying you're going to own the broad market indexes like the S&P 500 or the Russell 1000 or you know one of the bond indexes, but it's going to build that for you. And then every time you add more to it, if you plan to contribute along the way, you know it would automatically reinvest it according to the strategy. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. I appreciate it. Thank you
okay,
very much.
George. You're welcome. Thanks for your call today. Let's see. We're going to head to Illinois. Guadalupe, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi. My question is, I have a teenager, and my daughter would like to get her started with a little bit, like, want to make sure if she should bank where I bank, if that's a good idea, or pick another bank where she could start getting like a debit so she could learn how to save. And if she needs to go somewhere that she has like that debit card. And if there's no funds that she could learn from that experience that when you don't have any more money, that that's it.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. No, that's a great idea. You know, you certainly could do it at your bank. I mean, there are accounts that are geared toward teens. One of those that we've used with our kids is the Capital One. They call it the money account. It's their teen checking that comes with a debit card. You can go that. You can do that for children as young as 8 years old. It's actually a joint account with the parent or the legal guardian. And then once they turn 18, they can choose to open a checking account and transfer their balance to the money account. But prior to 18, that money account is great, primarily because it's really built for this purpose. So they have a great smartphone app that allows you to turn on and off that debit card. For instance, if they were to lose it, it's very easy for you to log in and monitor it. It's very easy for you to add money to it, you know, or take money out as you see fit from other linked accounts. So, you know, I think that's a great one, and it's not going to help her build credit, but it is a way that you can have full visibility, help her understand the importance of hard work, understand the importance of limited resources, help her set up a budget or a spending plan, and then learn how to handle that money, you know, using the debit card, whether that's, you know, embedded in her phone or with a physical debit card that she would use. But that smartphone app that's designed for parents, you know, would give you visibility into everything that's going on. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. So Capital One. Okay.
Yeah. If you just search for Capital One Money for Teens, it will come right up.
Okay.
Yep. And they can get that as low as 8 years old. But we appreciate it. Hopefully that helps you, Guadalupe. I'm delighted to hear that you're thinking long and hard about how you can train up the next generation in being wise stewards of God's money. We appreciate you calling today. Let's head to Kansas City. Josephine, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, Rob. How are you?
Absolutely. Doing great. Thanks for going.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was calling because my husband became retired a few years ago, but before that, he worked for a company that closed, and they moved to another state, to St. Joseph, Missouri, and he never did get his retirement from them.
Yeah.
And we've been trying to figure out, find a way to get it, but we haven't gotten nowhere. And I just want to know your advice of what you could tell us on that.
Yeah. Josephine, did you all stop getting statements from the plan administrator?
Stop getting statements?
Yeah. Are you getting any kind of statements?
Yes.
Okay. So nothing's coming in the mail. No. Are you able to, I mean, first thing you could do, I mean, there are places you can go like the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation at pbgc.gov or, you know, unclaimedretirementbenefits.com. But I would start with the company itself. I mean, just because they moved and relocated, you know, he should still have an account there. Have you called their customer service just to try to chase this down with his Social Security number?
Yes, we have. And they would transfer us to someone else, and we just never got anywhere.
Yeah.
That we never got anywhere, and they would say, well, we'll call you back, we'll get this information, and blah, 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 but they never got back.
Okay,
we never got anywhere.
Well, and they're, unfortunately, I mean, despite their poor customer service that you're describing here, they are going to be the best way for you to get, you know, to the bottom of this and find out what you're owed, because anything else is actually going to kind of go through a government entity, and that's just going to further complicate things. So I would just be really diligent, perhaps maybe call every day and just see if, you know, what you can do to get somebody on the phone who's willing to help you, try to escalate it to another department or to a superior and just tell them, listen, I need to chase down this account and I need you to help me to do it. And, you know, I've been getting the runaround here. Anything else is just going to add further complication and red tape to you getting the bottom of this. So I'd just be diligent and continuing to call. I wish I had better information. We'll be right back. We're grateful to have you with us today on Faith and Finance Live. I'm Rob West. Let's head right back to the phones to Moscow, Idaho. Hi, Jesse. Go ahead.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. Well, for block, so many questions. I am a sole proprietor, business owner, self-employed, and my family has gone through a litany of medical issues since December. My daughter was in a life-threatening accident. She's okay, thank Jesus. And then I myself ended up with sepsis in January with ongoing neurological problems since that. And then my husband was in a motorcycle accident in April and compound femur break and multiple surgeries so far. Our emergency fund is now exhausted. I am, because of my health, I am dissolving my business, so I am not currently making an income. So we're trying to figure out, my business carries about $18,000 in debt, which has been paid off, like been worked at paying off until this point. And I'm wondering, should we look at the option of consolidating the business debt? We also do have about $12,000 in personal debt that we've been chipping on as well. But with all of these crises happening all at once, if that would be an option for us, or if there's another option, or if we should possibly borrow from our house and roll into there. It's at a 2.5 interest rate, and we have a bit. If we did it all, rolled it into that, it would cover all of it, just to breathe a little. We're kind of like, what do we do?
I appreciate that. So have things stabilized a bit, Jesse? I mean, I realize now you've lost your income.
Right.
So what are you,
medical
what is
bills
your...
are still ongoing.
Okay.
So,
all right. And so those will continue to climb.
Adding up.
And then what's the income situation like?
My husband is employed, and he's full time. He's pretty secure, hopefully.
And so apart from, I understand that. So apart from new medical bills, are you all able to cover your monthly expenses and service both of these debts, the 18 and the 12?
No.
Okay. All right. And are there any assets in the business that you're closing down?
I am attempting to sell everything, and it's just a kind of a waiting game. It's my business deals with animals, so I can't just – I have to keep them alive while they're in my care before they can go find new homes, and that's been really – it's been a struggle.
No, I can understand that. Do you have a sense of what you might be able to generate once you are able to sell off the assets?
As of right now, my condition is not, we don't have a diagnosis yet and we don't have any prognosis. So I'm just kind of still winging it and still have some pretty severe health issues ongoing.
Sure. I'm so sorry to hear about that. Well, once you have relocated all the animals, do you have a sense of what you might be able to generate through the sale of business assets?
If I'm able to liquidate my business, it should pay off all of the business debts. I might not have any more, not a penny more than that. And at this point, it's like, okay, whatever.
Sure.
But at least that would be no more debt.
And is that something that could happen relatively quickly?
I would hope so, but it's not.
All right. Well, I mean, I think that's obviously the priority, because what I don't want you all to do, I certainly don't want you to touch that 2.5% mortgage, but I also don't want you to take this personal debt or business debt and now secure it to your house. So if things were to get worse, all of a sudden we're putting your home at risk. I mean, I realize it will take the pressure off because we're extending it out over, you know, whatever it would be. I mean, I wouldn't, again, do a new mortgage and take that 2.5 up to 7, but if you did a home equity loan and you, you know, had a 20-year payback, I mean, that could take some pressure off. But now we've taken unsecured debt, we've secured it to your primary residence, and I just don't like that. And we don't have a long-term solution currently to some of the challenges that could create more financial difficulty along the way. So I think the key is to try to, I mean, we want to try to protect your credit, but you can only do what you can do. And so I think you all do whatever you can possibly do. I understand your health may prevent you from, you know, doing anything to bring income in. Perhaps your husband can try to pick up a side job temporarily just to get through this season. I mean, is there some other way to raise income to keep that debt current? Try to quickly relocate those animals. If you know that you can't continue with the business, get those assets sold. Try to at least pay off that business debt, and then just focus on getting your budget as lean as possible to attack or at least service that personal debt. Is it credit cards?
Yes. And my husband would probably pick up a second job if he was not walking on a broken femur. All three of four of us have been down and out since December.
Oh my goodness. I'm sorry to hear that. Do you all have good health insurance?
We do. Thank God. And we have Life Flight insurance. That's a shameless plug. If you don't have it, go get it. It's worth the weight in gold.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Whatever service is in the area. Because that is my daughter's.
Let's do this. I want to connect you with one of our certified Christian financial counselors who can just help you kind of look at everything in detail and walk alongside you to see if we can help you get pointed in the right direction. Let's just pray that, you know, God will give you the strength and the wisdom to know how to, you know, unwind this business if that's the direction that you're going, and do it quickly and get out from under this business debt. You know, thank goodness for the, you know, we're grateful to the Lord for that health insurance that you have. And, you know, I think if we can rein in spending, perhaps your husband, you know, is, you know, able to get back on his feet, literally, and, you know, perhaps pick up a second job to service that debt. Our friends at ChristianCreditCounselors.org can help get you one level monthly payment for that debt, probably 2-3% of the total balance. You know, so at $12,000, you know, we'd be looking, you know, at maybe $360 a month. I mean, I realize that's not insignificant, but if you could swing that, especially with the lower interest rates they could offer, we could at least help get, you know, that going in the right direction. I think the key would be, let's try to do this without touching any of the equity in the home. Obviously, if things get dire, you know, you could look at selling the house. I mean, although that's not necessarily going to solve anything because of what's going on in the housing market, and then you'd pick up another smaller place at a much higher interest rate. And so, you know, now the affordability just becomes a real problem. So I'm going to have you stay on the line. We're going to get your information, and I'm going to have one of our Christian financial counselors call you. We're going to cover the cost for this, Jesse, and this will just be somebody who can really help you go through the numbers and work with you and your husband together on a plan, you know, week by week on where we go from here. Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Happy to do it. You stay on the line and we'll have somebody pick it up and get your information. Let's head to Florida. Hi, Mike. Thanks for your patience. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, Rob? Thank you so much for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Yes. I have a question about the capital gains tax. My mom, she's going to sell a piece of real estate, but potentially she's probably going to pay $200,000 in potential capital gains tax. Is there any way that we can kind of not avoid it, but kind of gifted to kind of.
Yeah. So give me a rundown of what she's doing. How much is she selling this house for?
She's going to list it probably for like a little over $1 million.
Okay. So she was listed for $1 million. And what is her cost basis?
Cost basis, what she paid for it was, I mean, we're talking about over 40 years, like $60,000.
Okay. So, and then has she made significant improvements to it or additions or anything like that?
I would say since she owned the house to now?
Yes.
I would say probably about like $50,000.
Okay. Yeah. So, and then what is her adjusted gross income? Is she married filing singly as a single person or a joint?
She's married. She's married, okay. But this is not her primary house, though.
Right. No, I understand that. But what is their adjusted gross income roughly? Do you know?
Roughly combined, I would say no more than $30,000.
Okay. Well, they're probably not going to pay any capital gains. And here's why. So long-term capital gains rates have to do with your adjusted gross income. And if you're married filing jointly and your adjusted gross income is under $83,000, then your capital gain rate is zero.
Okay. Even though that's not the primary house?
Right. If it was a primary house, then they would get, up to $500,000 in gains they could offset. But she's and you're telling me, let's say her cost basis is $100,000, what she paid for it plus the additions. She sells it for $1 million. She's got a $900,000 capital gain. So then you would say, okay, what is the capital gain rate? Well, to determine the long-term capital gain rate for 2023, you would go to the table and you'd say, okay, for somebody married filing jointly, up to $89,000, $89,250 in adjusted gross income, the capital gain rate is zero.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well,
so she should be in good shape.
Okay.
Now,
all right. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, let me just finish with this. I will say, I'm getting a sliver of information, so always a good idea to check with your CPA just to go over all the final numbers and make sure we're not missing something here. But just generally speaking, married filing jointly up to $89,000, capital gain rate for assets held more than a year in 2023 is 0%. You don't get the 15% rate until you have income of over $89,251.
So around $90,000, that's the mark we look at.
That's the mark, yeah. And that's income, not the gain. That's your adjusted gross income for the year. But make sure you check in with your CPA, because anytime you have a major event like this or, something, you just always want to get good counsel. Hey, Mike, thanks for being a great son, and we appreciate you listening to the program today. God bless you. Kathy and Mary Lou, I really apologize we didn't get to you. If you all want to stay on the line, we'll see if... Tahira can get your information. We'll get you scheduled perhaps to be first on tomorrow's broadcast. I'd be delighted to chat with you. Folks, thanks for being along with us today. On behalf of my team, Dan Anderson, Tahira Haynes, thank you for Lynn and Jim Henry. Couldn't do it without them. I'm Rob West. This is Faith and Finance Live, which is a partnership between Moody Radio and FaithFi. Have a great rest of your day. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.